Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with Gary Bobroff about his book, Crop Circles, Jung and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine. But first, a quick reminder about the three-day event coming up January 17th at the Upsky Long Island Hotel called the Save Long Island Forum. You can find more information about this important event at SaveLongIslandForum.com. Many well-known speakers will be presenting at this event, talking about issues such as Common Core, genetically modified organisms, Agenda 21, geoengineering, and much more. That's SaveLongIslandForum.com. We go now to hear part of an interview with Penny Pierce. She was on the show back in November, talking about her book, Leap of Perception, The Transforming Power of Your Attention. Her book discusses issues such as right and left brain, duality, centering yourself, becoming the center, and the pitfalls of multitasking.
Well, I really differentiate between, I think, what most people think of as positive and negative, because I think that part of this transformation process we're in is that we have to clear the clutter. And that is all the old beliefs, the shoulds, the things we inherited from other people that are not really true or not really in alignment with the way energy and consciousness function naturally according to universal laws. So I think that the clearing of fear is a very positive thing, although when it starts coming up, it's scary. But to me, it is absolutely necessary to get rid of the contractions that we hold within ourselves. So that I think this year in particular is a very intense energy, which is, I think it's very much about freedom. It's about breaking through the last remnants of places where you've been mired and stuck so that you can step through the doorway. I mean, I hear most of my clients, everybody who I talk to says, well, I just feel stuck. And they know something's coming. It's just right there lurking behind the scenes, but they can't quite tell what it is yet. And there needs to be a time where you get out of your left brain and the need for definition and move into the right brain, which is there's no language in the right brain. It's all like an animal. You know, you're artistic. You're merging with the flows of energy. You're letting things gestate in you. And you're not trying to define things too early. You're letting it have its own natural flow and rhythm. And you kind of have to, you know, gestate things in a very, you know, noodle around with things and let it have its own flow. And that's where a lot of people are right now, in the shifting from one way of defining life into a new way, you know, that they haven't discovered yet. It has to show itself to us. And so it is a time for having a lot of courage, you know, to not have to go back into the old definitions. You know what I mean?
I think I do, and I wanted to also ask you, can you explain how courage is related to the heart?
Well, the heart, I feel like, is really truly the experience of the soul in the body, and it is an a place of reality, a place of almost like a meeting place for the inner world and the outer world to come together. You know, and the word courage comes from the French word cœur, you know, which means heart. And so I think courage often has to do with just coming from your heart, and that often means radical honesty. You know, you do what you feel like you must do. You face it. You go into it, you know. And the heart is an amazing thing, really. It's not a mushy-gushy emotional thing. It's a place of neutrality where I always think of the heart as something that kind of eats pain. It doesn't understand pain. So if you move pain into the heart, it dissolves and turns into love. It just goes back into the unified field. So it is not really damaged by pain, you know, and we don't understand it very well.
Well, I appreciate you explaining it on that level because a lot of this material I haven't really heard before. Radical honesty, I have, and that's a book.
probably.
It's a really interesting book. The other element I'm interested in that you have researched in depth and is listening to, I guess, that voice of intuition within you. And have you been able to really understand what that voice is? I mean, there are many voices, I suppose, happening in people's conscious state. Mm-hmm. But is there a voice that is more down toward where the heart is that people listen to?
Well, I think it often comes really directly from the body and the instinct. Like the first level of intuition might be called instinct and might relate to the reptile brain, you know, where you have sort of attraction and repulsion, that sense of something's really right or it's not quite right or it's dangerous, or, you know, you have signals in your body that where you lean towards something or you open up or energy bubbles up or you get chills. And people say, oh, that's true because I got chills, you know, on that. Or you feel a warm spreading feeling or something. Often it's the signal of energy releasing, moving up the spine and out the arms and spreading across the chest, and you get warmer and you feel safe. When you get a feeling like that, it's almost like the soul is talking to you and it's saying, yes, this is in tune with you. But when you get a signal where you contract, feel cold, clammy, your hands, you withdraw energy from your hands and feet and they get cold, you know, or you feel like somebody threw a wet blanket on top of you,
mm-hmm.
you know, those things, or you get that knot in the pit of your stomach in your solar plexus, then you know something's not right. And it's not appropriate at that point to power through and make yourself do it anyway, because it's probably not going to work out. You know, if you don't listen to that, you know, it'll just get stronger and you'll get whacked from it, you know, from not listening. So, I mean, I start there with very subtle signals in the body itself. And then sometimes I get information through the senses. You know, I'll smell something. It smells fishy, it tastes fishy, or, you know, you get those sensory inputs. You know, something looks bright or something looks dark. It's not that it literally does, but you get that sense about it.
Oh, there's a muscle test too, right?
Well, you could do that, kinesiology, yeah.
Not everybody can do that, I understand. For example, you are, you know, ultra sensitive, and for those who aren't, it's a little more difficult to tune in.
But I think if you ask yourself a question, like, for instance, if I have a problem and I have a solution, possible solution number A and number B and number C, I could do any of three ways. And you pretend that number one is a smell, and you just see what smell you get. Then you check number two, and you see what smell you get. And you check number three. What happens is you often will get immediate responses, and then you can tell one of them you like better than the others. It's not logical. It's not in your left brain. Or you could pretend it's a sound or music or a texture. You know, any of the senses can serve as a kind of barometer for you.
I might be wrong, but I understand that women are much better at this than men.
No, not true. I think the difference is that men's brains literally don't have as many connecting fibers between the two sides of the brain. Women have a harder time compartmentalizing. Everything happens at once. The inside, the outside's all connected. But with men, often there needs to be a deliberate choice to shift the level of the brain. And when you shift into the right brain more and get out of the compartmentalization and the language side, men are just as intuitive.
So men have to make the conscious decision to do that.
Right.
That was part of an interview with author Penny Pierce. Watch Show's Laura Shapira and Dr. Connie Zweig discussed various aspects of Carl Jung's psychological theory of the human shadow as critical components of ourselves to acknowledge, but if unrecognized, the human shadow begins to grow and evolve on its own, unconsciously, and will probably show up in situations under stress. This, as Dr. Zweig and Laura Shapira describe, is the moment to also recognize some of your own buried treasure. If this exploration is suppressed, your hidden treasure could remain buried. Our guest, Gary Bobroff, says there's an interesting transformation taking place. It's an ongoing shift away from negative components within the dominant masculine energy and toward the feminine archetypes and models. Jung, Crop Circles, and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine is the title of his recent book. Gary describes his research using Dr. Carl Jung's theories as a lens to examine topics such as the crop circle phenomena. Gary Bobroff, welcome to Another News.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
You've written a very interesting book titled Crop Circles, Jung, and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine. Very interesting. So many areas to begin discussing. However, I want to start with some of the concepts that you bring forward regarding the shadow, specifically the avoidance of the shadow within certain New Age movements, such as if you say anything negative, it's not useful, it's not productive.
Yeah. I think, we certainly see that in the crop circle world in terms of everybody needs to think, or certain people need to think that every single formation is an authentic mystery phenomenon and not a hoax, and there's certainly a hoax phenomenon. But in the wider community, it really varies from place to place and community to community, but you definitely see an emphasis on favoring the positive, favoring the light, obviously, especially in the New Age community and particularly on the West Coast and particularly Southern California. Which I think has its own spin on it, where it becomes part of a social custom almost to really avoid anything critical or negative or down. And unfortunately, that creates an environment where the shadow can really thrive. And, there are lots of examples below the surface of, the Southern California yoga community or, the sort of New Age groups of people taking advantage of that emphasis on positivity and really teachers taking advantage of students and that kind of thing in a way that never comes to light because the community just resists any kind of discussion of shadow type materials or dark stuff or, the reality of what people are doing when that reality is uncomfortable for them.
We've had a number of shows about the shadow, Carl Jung's theory on the human shadow. And what was coming up in the discussion is when you have a moment where you have an outburst or you lose composure, something like that, that's the time to examine what's going on within you instead of running away from it immediately, and you could find your own personal treasure.
Yeah. And I think really, there's always something of ourselves to be picked up from the shadow, and certainly for a lot of people, their greatest gifts can be hidden away in there. And if we're gifted in terms of saying, maybe being very creative or, being a sort of magician type person who can go out and come up with a book or come up with something wonderful that takes a long time to create, the shadow there may be the lack of the warrior. And we all need to go out into the world and participate. And so we need these shadow qualities in order to really flesh out who we are and to really move into life fully. And it can happen through emotional outbursts like you're speaking of when you notice it there. Or it can, very often is a long-term pattern of just energies that we avoid. And, we stay away from the uncomfortable places that we don't like. I mean, you might even see people. One thing I see is that certain people, maybe if they haven't integrated their own warrior or whatever, will resist even sort of rigorous debate or combative debate about issues that they're involved with, and they only go to communities that really just support their own ideas already and don't really, you know, when you get into a place of conflict, they really feel uncomfortable and automatically step back. And I think, you know, that's the kind of thing that you do see in the sort of New Age movement or the wider sort of consciousness community that is, you know, particularly widespread on the West Coast, but of course I'm sure it's on the East Coast too.
It is. There is a manifestation of it here in New York City in some aspect, but with the you can't smoke in a public park, you can't smoke a cigarette. Now the right. Vaporizers, you can't do that, and the tall soda drinks, and it's you had a word for that.
Yeah, the over-momification of the world. Yeah, you know, we the world is a risky place, and you know, accidents happen and bad things happen. But you know, obviously, when we do those kind of things that you're doing, you know, it's investing the state with the inner parent that, you know, obviously we need to develop ourselves, and really that kind of mode of operation, you know, it certainly, you know, for me personally, I think it's a way of giving the state too much power, and I'm uncomfortable with it on that level. But it certainly is, you know, it reinforces that parent-child relationship between people and the government. And I think that those kind of dynamics, while they're endless and go on through all periods of time, I think it's the kind of thing that hopefully we're kind of growing out of at this moment, hopefully.
Although you call it the momification or it's the nanny state, something tells me that's more of a masculine effort to suppress, you know, exploration into the unknown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly with, you know, you see that with the general trend in our society, you know, to restrict access to any kind of mind-altering substance, so that sort of paternalistic attitude of protecting yourself or protecting the people from things that you're personally uncomfortable with. So, you know, you certainly see that in the drug war and marijuana being illegal. Hopefully that's, you know, coming to an end here in the next short period of years. But
Yes, it is. Things are changing in that regard. But also the governments around the world with their disclosure on UFO phenomena. However, in this country,
right,
there's still a big problem with that.
Yeah, it really is. And for me, I was, you know, I really do couch this whole discussion within a lens of masculine and feminine. And there's this, I see a larger historical trend that has us moving away from these kind of moves where, you know, it's like we're at the moment where a lot of the curtains are being drawn back on masculine institutions that are really no longer serving us. And I think certainly one of them is, you know, the drug war, which I think you could consider a crime against humanity and, you know, really, really wrong, incarcerating millions of people and ruining millions of lives. That's just one example, though, of this larger trend that, you know, masculine institutions more and more and more in the last 20, 50 years are having their shadow really shown. You know, we used to invest, you know, in the pre-Eisenhower era, there was an investment of the White House as a sort of place of light and, you know, a place of goodness and all that, and even into the Kennedy era. And I think since then, through, you know, really dramatic steps or through subtle steps, that office has really been brought down to earth, and it's not, we don't view it in an inflated light anymore. And I think you could say the same thing of Wall Street or of the Vatican, these big masculine institutions that we used to think were so full of light. Over the years, we've seen them be really brought down to earth, and really their shadow has come out. And I think that's a larger trend. I think you see that in sports figures, too. So many of the masculine heroes of our day are getting knocked down and knocked down. And I think that's part of a zeitgeist. I think it's a part of a change where our trend of investing masculine institutions and idols with our own energy is coming to an end, and you see more and more the rise of individuals. You know, the rise of social media speaks to the era changing, and right now every moral question we have is really up to the individual. There's no, you know, Walter Cronkite is not going to come on and tell everyone what they should think about everything. We are each being left as individuals to sit with the moral questions of our day. And, you know, crop circles is one of those mysteries. No one's going to tell you what it's all about. But also, you know, the environmental crisis, it's really in the hands of people. And you see the you know, the rise of the anti-hero coming to fight, you know, the masculine institutions with Snowden and Assange and other people.
Exactly, Gary. Listeners know Snowden and Manning and Barrett Brown and Jeremy Hammond. These are the people who have come forward to expose the corruption within those institutions that you'd never know about if they didn't come forward.
Exactly.
Getting into the crop circle area and your research, why did you choose crop circles?
Well, it kind of chose me. You know, crop circles hit me as a potential idea to write a book about 12 years ago. And, you know, it really struck me at that moment. I was reading a book by Edward Edinger, who's a famous Jungian, called The Creation of Consciousness, where Jung looks in his book Answer to Job at the different phases of the relationship between the Western mind and their God image, and sees a dynamic process there, that if you look at the, in Answer to Job, Jung puts the, you know, Yahweh in the Western Bible on the couch, so to speak, and sees a dynamic relationship there where in those stories, the human being is really playing the moral role, and Yahweh is playing the, you know, the fire and brimstone role. And, you know, it's a dynamic process over time, and I was really struck by that, and I thought, you know, here's crop circles as something in our era that's drawing us into a dynamic relationship with it, where we're changed, we're invited to mystery, we're invited to wonder and consider what, you know, how we view the world, what we think about the world, our personal questions. And what I love about it is that, you know, despite the objective evidence, we know that there's a real mystery there. Despite the history, again, we know that there's something that's been going on for hundreds, if not thousands of years. The question is posed in a subtle way that we can each sit with it, and we each have to wrestle our own, you know, not necessarily demons, but our own questions, our own fears. Certainly to consider that there's something out there that's bigger than we are is a numinous.
So we're left to interpret this phenomena, such as crop circles and other paranormal events, but specifically crop circles, because there hasn't been a defined answer as to who's doing it, what is it, and the ones where it's pretty obvious that they're fake, people usually leave it alone. There's always going to be that copycat thing going on with the hoax. But with the authentic, and what Jung is talking about also, is there an issue with our projections onto it?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, and that's what we're entirely wrestling with, is our own projections onto it. And, you know, there's a long history of human reactions to crop circles. So there's a very famous woodcut, an English pamphlet printed, and it's from 1678, and it shows the Mowing Devil woodcut. It's actually in the British National Museum. This document shows a sort of a devil-type figure, you know, carving in the wheat what appears to be a crop circle, and describes it very much like the ones we see today. Then you see, a few years later, you see an Oxford professor, his diagrams showing a crop circle and then some sort of weather phenomenon creating that. So over the years, you know, we've seen the sort of projection of the devil onto it. We've seen the projection of it's a weather phenomenon, it's some sort of natural thing that we're going to figure out how it works. And there is these historical trends that show us that, you know, our responses to crop circles really tell us more about who we are than about the phenomenon itself. There's certainly, I think, the most common response today is either A, to consider it a hoax, or to bring the lens to it that is the lens of solution that wants to solve it. And I think, in a way, both of those reflect the larger trend, which is increasingly over the last 300 years with the rise of science, and especially in the last 50 years, we've gotten more and more high on ourselves and more inflated. And, you know, our view of our own self today is almost filled with wonder and awe we used to have for God. I think, you know, all that awe that we used to have for the miracle of life and for the world is kind of invested in our own creativity and technology and money and and in ourselves and what we do. And things like crop circles deflate that because there is no direct solution. There's only a mystery to participate with. And I think, you know, the mysteries that we face today, like crop circles and the relationship between matter and psyche and quantum physics and synchronicity and extended mind research that we see coming through that says the world's bigger than we think it is, those are kind of the bright face that is deflating that inflation. The dark face of it is what we're doing to the planet, where we're seeing that there's limits and we can't, you know, this idea that the economy is just going to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow is an illusion. And I think that those, that inflation and those illusions are coming from a masculine place that really prefers, you could almost call it ego masculine or shadow masculine. It really wants solutions. It thinks more one-dimensionally, doesn't really like mystery. It wants, you know, utility and, you know, our purpose to be a very, you know, usable one and concrete. And you know, here we have these other questions that are coming, you know, into our world today that really take us into a deeper way of thinking that I think, you know, you can say it's the lens of the feminine that we need to apply, because we're not going to solve the, you know, the issue of what we're doing to the planet unless we're deflated enough to see what we're doing. You know, Jung has a great quote where he talks about, you know, we're the complete fulfillment of all the most wondrous possibilities of thousands of years of human evolution, and we're also the absolute disappointment of all that, the disappointment of the hopes of all the ages. So we're at the same time the ultimate light fulfillment of all the possibilities of the human race and the ultimate shadow fulfillment. And that's couldn't be more an extreme dynamic range that we have to really sit with today. And I think both are of those are accurate. And you know, then what do we go? How do we go forward with that? Well, we do our own thing that we're called to do and work on the collective issues we can. That's how I see the big picture of all that.
Our guest is Gary Bobroff. He's the author of Crop Circles, Jung, and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine. Gary, it's a very interesting lens that you are looking through paranormal phenomena such as crop circles. That's a very interesting take on this. Now, with these authentic crop circles and your research, what have you come to understand in terms of who's doing it? Where's it coming from?
Well, you know, I'll stick with what you're saying about the shadow there, because I think one of the first things that comes up, and I, you know, chapter one of the book is the science. So there's a real phenomenon. We know, you know, in authentic formations, there's physical changes to the plants themselves. There's biochemical changes. There's cellular changes. There's germinal changes. There's electromagnetic changes, and there's more science. And I really recommend people can go to my website, and I've got links there to see it. And it's jungandcropcircles.net.
Okay.
In chapter three, I get into looking at the shadow, and I think it's obviously an ongoing discussion throughout the book. But, you know, what's really clear to me, first of all, is that, you know, the number one response today is that, you know, if you ask people about crop circles, especially in the U.S., or really even in England, it's quite amazing, is that they think the whole thing's hoaxed. Now, why is that? Well, one thing we know is that there was a very well put together publicity campaign that promoted that idea in the early 90s by a media firm that seemed to appear only for that one story and then disappear again, and that the physical location of that media group had some connection to or was near to or in a building that was owned by British intelligence. And so there's been an active campaign put out there to spread the idea that the whole thing is a hoax.
Mm.
Now, that's fine. That's one thing that's gone on. But why do people buy into it so easily? Well, first of all, it's easier. They don't have to go and work and think about it and look, you know, and try and find the research for themselves. But the other thing is this trend towards inflation in our culture, which is we're really high on ourselves. So I think we're so invested with ourselves that we've kind of taken all that energy we used to invest into a God image and put it into ourselves. So for us to think that there's something else out there is a defeat to that kind of inner grandiosity. So there's a resistance. So we kind of, on some level, believe that everything that goes on is a human product. You know, there's no idea that there could be another agency out there. And that's a big part of it, and that's a shadow response. It's just to deny the whole thing. And it's also easier than actually having to go and do work. And then there's another way that the shadow creeps in, which is simply just to categorize the phenomenon and then move on. I mean, I've known people that say, oh, crop circles, that's aliens, and then they're done with it. And,
right.
You know, maybe that's, I'm not saying that's the wrong answer, but I'm saying what's the level of process there? You know, if it becomes, if your categorization becomes a way to, you know, stop participating in a dynamic process with something by which you can grow and deepen, then that's, again, a shadow way of removing yourself from it. So, and that's kind of a Buddhist notion as well. You know, you limit things by categorizing them. So, you know, we live in this time where all these mysteries and crises are coming forward, and they're very difficult to struggle with, especially the darker, you know, crises that we're facing. And the mysteries are interesting and exciting, but they don't give these immediate solutions. So there's all these things that we have to wrestle with emotionally, and, you know, the shadow wants us not to do that. And, you know, it definitely dampens our emotional participation, too. You know, this part of this masculine trend we're in really emphasizes an objective approach to everything. So where's the emotion? Where's heart? Especially in a time when, you know, we're destroying our planet, you know, we should be very angry. We should be very upset and you know, involved with this on an emotional level and have that energy fire our action. And the culture really doesn't like that because it's a very utilitarian, masculine, tidy culture that doesn't want these kind of emotional engagements with the world. And I think both in the sense of these mysteries that are coming to us that are questions that we can participate with the whole of who we are. And, you know, crop circles are beautiful, too. They speak like works of art to the heart.
We're speaking with Gary Bobroff about his book, Young Crop Circles and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine. We'll be right back after this break. Just tuning in, we're speaking with Gary Bobroff about his book, Young Crop Circles and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine.
You know, so on both the bright side and on the dark side, you know, we're being called to bring the whole of who we are into our engagement with the world and getting past the shadows, denial, and limitation of these questions and qualities and mysteries and crises. That's an ongoing battle for all of us.
Are there specific messages that you have uncovered that are more direct and maybe not as abstract within the crop circle?
Well, you know, there are people that do that. There are people that look at each crop circle and kind of decode it or look for a message in it. And I think some of those are wonderfully done and tremendously interesting. But to me, that's a continuation of a masculine response. And what I'm called to share with people and call them to is a more, what I would say, feminine approach to the phenomenon, which doesn't throw out the masculine. You know, we start with the masculine, we look at the science, we know that there's a genuine phenomenon there, in addition to there being a hoaxed one, and that we know that there's science and history that proves that, and, you know, chapter 1 and 2 in the book. But then from there, I think the moral question here is, are you going to participate with the whole of your being? Which means, are you going to bring, you know, your emotional process to the question of crop circles? Are you going to, you know, look at the fact that, you know, you want to blow the whole thing off and not think about it? Are you going to look at, you know, the fact that you were awestruck by them? You know, move into it with the whole of who you are. And so, you know, rather than looking for, you know, decoding or solving one, my question or my approach was to take a Jungian approach and look at the whole phenomenon as though it was a dream and the world is the dreamer, or the Western world is the dreamer. And the general symbols in the dream are, we have this, these designs, and they are in living grains. The crop, whatever it is, what kind of crop it is still alive after the formation comes down. They're not all snapped over like they are in the hoaxes. It's still alive, and it's in grain, and it's in these mandala-type shapes and forms. And these were two images that Jung was really clear on, the idea of what he called the self archetype. You know, our drive to regain balance is expressed in the mandala form and in the circle form. And, you know, we certainly are over-imbalanced in favor of the masculine today, and that's a disease, and it has us rootless and disconnected from the world. And here's this phenomenon ingrained, rooted to the earth. And, you know, the grain symbol is directly connected in our psychology and our mythology to the feminine, to the miracle of life. And how have we lost that? You know, our culture has a Thanksgiving Day that is synonymous with materialism. Well, what does that word mater mean in Latin? It means matter, and also means mother. So whenever you're compulsive about something, and we are very compulsive about material things, that's a red flag that the shadow is there. So we're compulsively going after mater, after the feminine, after a connection to the goddess inside ourselves and in the world, and we're doing it in a compulsive way for material things instead of in a spiritual way, in a creative play way, where we ritualize our love for the earth and thankfulness for the fruits of the earth and thankfulness for the abundance in our lives in a way that we, you know, bring our whole being and celebrate a ritual that's real and creative and alive for us. That would be how you would connect to the feminine in a living way, in a real way, in an authentic way today. So we're at this time that, you know, we've lost that, and, you know, here's this mystery that's calling us in its own way back to connect with us. And you know, there's a few other aspects there that I think are really important, which is that, you know, it deflates us, it brings us down. So everything we project onto it, it's still there, it's physical, and we have to, you know, to deal with our particular theory may not be the exactly right one. You know, we have again and again and again come back down to earth with it. It's a constant process and a constant struggle, but I think it can be a joyful one too.
Gary, you've done a number of seminars and presentations in Los Angeles and in the UK. What has been the response to this material and research that you're giving out to people?
Well, you know, it's wonderful. You know, I think a lot of people honestly are blown away. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, just by the science and the fact that this is really happening, I've seen people almost go into a shock response, that their whole kind of reality gets a little bit crumbled by the fact that there's something out there that really is other. It's really is, there's a non-human event going on here. And for a lot of people, I think that's a big adjustment. And I think we have to make room for that in our process. And I think, you know, this is a very unusual time that we're in as a culture, and we're going through a lot, and people's response to this phenomenon is, when they let themselves experience it, is quite profound and deep, and it's wonderful to be, you know, part of having that process happen for them. But it really, you know, it has to do with them and the phenomenon more than what I'm doing, I think. And it's particularly wonderful to go out there with people that have never been in one. I was in a formation this summer in England, and we had, you know, dowsing rods, and we were kind of trying to follow the energy and just having a great time, and found bent nodes. You know, there's these bent nodes that create the lay. So the crop isn't all pushed over. The actual wheat is changed so that if you have a stalk standing straight up, you'll see towards the bottom of the plant a 90-degree bend. Not in every stalk, but in certain stalks mm-hmm. where there's this, the whole plant has been changed as if someone asked it to bend over at 90 degrees and lay flat. So we found not only nodes like that, we found corner bits that were wrapped around standing parts of the crop in the design that had multiple bends in them. So three-dimensionally bent and hard. You know, it's the shape of the plant has been changed. And so we're finding those and dowsing and walking around and getting in kind of a joyful space with enjoying this wonder that we're in. And it really, you could feel everyone in the formation at that time kind of take that energy and, you know, there was a wonderful old Italian man whose daughter asked me if he could use my dowsing rods, and he went around and he didn't speak any English, and he walked by me with the dowsing rods, and they're moving in his hand, and he looks at me and he goes, "What the heck?" You know, so, you know, people can have a lot of fun exploring this too, and I think that's what we're supposed to do. You know, we're being drawn back to wonder, and that's a wonderful thing, and we need it a lot.
Gary, you mentioned the non-human element here, and I'm interested in hearing your take on what you think that is and what's going on here, if you could define what you mean by that.
Well, you know, I don't spend a lot of time talking about that either in the presentations or my book, and the reason why is, first of all, I don't know. You know, I've never seen one made. I can tell you, you know, lots of eyewitnesses who, what they report, and there's a variety of things people see. But, you know, I can't answer that question, and I think it's a personal question for a lot of people, and I think, you know, crop circles are meant to be the way they are. They're meant to be a mystery. There's no error in the way that they are. They're designed to draw us into a process, into a, you know, an inquiry that is individual and personal. And I think so much of what I want to do is invite people to their own process and not give them the answer. For me, I would say the same thing that I think 80 or 90% of the people that are crop circle researchers would say, that you can look at it from a spiritual point of view. You can look at it from an extraterrestrial point of view, or you know, some sort of dimensional beings that are other than human. Or you can look at it as something to do with the earth. And I think there's certainly a component having to do with the earth, but there are clearly some other intelligences involved. And are they spiritual? Are they extraterrestrial? I mean, what do we even mean? That's part of what I'm saying with the process with the shadow here,
right,
is that very often people say aliens or spiritual or whatever, because that's easier for them and that's comfortable for them, rather than moving into a process of saying, well, what do we really think? I mean, do we really think there are UFOs? Do they actually travel in a physical thing? You know, what are our real questions, and can we honor those questions and sit with them and see what comes up for us? And I don't want to, I don't have the answer to that in an objective way, and I don't want to interfere with other people's process, and I think it's a really valuable one. And it's the kind of process that we're sitting with today. There's a wonderful documentary filmmaker. Suzanne Taylor is a producer of two movies that I highly recommend on crop circles. One of them is called Quest for Truth, and the other is called What on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those documentaries really allow you to sit with the process yourself. One of the questions that she's really interested in is, what would it mean for humanity to really realize that there's something else out there? And I think, you know, boy, do we need that. We are, as I said, so involved in ourselves and so high on ourselves and so high on our own products and technology and creativity that we're willing and actively destroying the world we live in to continue that kind of lifestyle and self-involvement. And we really need to be brought down to earth. And one of the ways that that could happen is through realizing that, you know, we're just one of many kind of intelligences in this universe. And so psychologically, you know, that could be an incredibly powerful realization if more people we're snapped out of this grandiosity that our culture puts us all into.
Some of the listeners might even argue or suggest that it's by design to keep this information in a very confused realm mixed with hoaxes and this and that, because as people begin to understand, I don't know, the larger element, that realm of the feminine in the mystery, the masculine institutions may begin to crumble.
Yeah. Well, there's good reason to believe that governments are involved with trying to muddy the waters around this genuine mystery. They certainly are interested, and, you know, all the documentaries on crop circles, you'll see the researchers talking about how, you know, governments approach them early on. And, you know, there's no question governments are very heavily involved. You know, in fact, on the Quest for Truth DVD, there's an extra feature where you can watch British military helicopters chasing balls of light. And there's a history in Europe of, you know, we call it the will-o-wisp or whip-o-will, these balls of light that travel around. Well, they've been filmed in areas around crop circles numerous times. We know that there's some connection between crop circles and these balls of light. And you can actually watch. You can see the ball of light, and then you can see the crop circle or the helicopters, British military helicopters, moving in relationship to these balls of light and chasing them. So the governments actively know that there's a heck of a lot going on that they're not telling us. And, you know, that's part of it. And our choice and our response to that should be to get more involved. You know, it's kind of like Occupy. It's up to the individual. We've got to, you know, go and do these things ourselves and find out the answers for ourselves. And, you know, we overcome that interference by putting ourselves into engagement with this phenomenon. So that is definitely going on there. Definitely don't want it coming out, and it's up to us to do something about it.
A big part of the listenership are activists and focused on some level of public resistance. There have been a lot of self-help gurus out there that talk about the power of intention and how relax and go with the flow with that. And I understand it from that perspective. However, if your focus is on activism and public resistance to maintain civil, social, and criminal justice, there's a contradiction there. How do you see that contradiction?
Absolutely. It's this into the light kind of all, you know, warm and fuzzy kind of stuff. And that really resists the shadow and the grounding and the earth and the kind of more difficult, you know, uncomfortable issues that we're struggling with today. And I think that there's a big disservice that is done to all of us and so many of us by this emphasis on the bright and the light and going up and intention. You know, this inflation that I'm talking about, the masculine inflation that I think is behind all the ills or most of the psychological ills of our culture, it does that in a New Age way with this light stuff, because it says all that's important is your ego. If you can get that conscious brain in your head just to dampen down and shove all that negative stuff down a little ball, you know, and if you can just get this your consciousness right and have a bright and shiny consciousness, then the whole world is going to change for you. And that is absolutely not nonsense. I mean, I think having a good attitude is important, and we all need to integrate the warrior and have, you know, energy to go out there and participate in the world and fight. But, you know, just having a bright consciousness, that's just an overemphasis of the ego. You know, we're this whole unconscious being which has a body and physicality, and we're joined, you know, collectively to other people. And, you know, really what our call should be is a call to the heart. I mean, one of the most interesting things for me to understand as a Jungian is synchronicity, which is a word that Jung coined. Well, you know, there's a notion today, and I think it's been growing since the 60s and 70s, that misunderstands what synchronicity is. Now, synchronicity has meaning. It's when, you know, we have an event happen that's very strange that connects physical events. Perhaps we bump into someone or something happens, or there's a coordination between physical events and our inner state that's meaningful. But what people tend to miss is that always with a synchronicity, there's an emotional presence. Jung talked about emotion as psychic mass. You know, if you don't care about something, if it has no value to you, then there's no emotional relationship to it. And our culture really dampens down our emotional connection to the world. And in synchronicity, what happens, there's no synchronicity without an emotion. So, you know, you break up with someone and you run into them all over town. You know, you people talk about knowing when someone is in danger from far away or knowing when someone's died. Well, those are the people they know are the people that they're connected to on a heart level. And to really be looking at this kind of the world through this kind of bright-sided, light-emphasizing way can cut us off from all this, you know, embodied feeling stuff that's so important. And that's what really makes the world go round. And what we're figuring out today is that we live in a heart-shaped world. You know, the fact that events can be drawn into occurrence so that they're meaningful for us based on our heart connection to those circumstances, I mean, that is a radically different notion of what the world is. And it says that, you know, this world is created from the beginning for the creation of meaning and for connection via the heart. I mean, that is a radical change in worldview from what most people are carrying around with them when they get up in the morning and go to work, you know. But that's reality. You know, we're just starting to consciously understand it. And that's what our moment's about, I think.
Well, Gary, I really appreciate you going into depth here. And I know you can really explore these topics based on watching some of your webcasts. And there are some webinars coming up. Can you tell listeners what they are, when they are, and how to tune in?
The webinar is a 6-part webinar that we're starting Sunday the 19th at 3 o'clock East Coast time.
19th of?
January. And we're going to have tremendous guests. We have Andrew Harvey joining us, who's a wonderful, especially on the goddess and the archetypal feminine. And Andy Thomas, who's a conspiracy theory expert. He's joining us for the third episode. And, you know, we have wonderful guests throughout, and each week we're going to look at a different aspect of the crop circle mystery. So science is the first episode, and we go through that. And, you know, obviously I'm extremely excited about it, and I think it'll be wonderful to be dialoguing with these great people about it. And I think what listeners will get, or participants in the live event will get, they can actually ask questions live, is a real, you know, in-depth look at the phenomenon and a real in-depth chance to participate, to get involved with it themselves and to give themselves time to consider what's going on here. And I really do go into more of the depth psychological, looking at the shadow, looking at the archetypal feminine and grain goddess and how that relates to this mystery. The book, Crop Circles, Jung and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine, is available at jungandcropcircles.net, which is my website, and it's been picked up by North Atlantic Books, and it's going to be going away for a while and then reappearing and available again in August. Right now, it's still available on the website.
Okay.
But in August, it's coming out again on North Atlantic Books.
Regarding the webinar, listeners could go to your website, correct?
Yeah, there's links on the website, Jung and Crop Circles, J-U-N-G and Crop Circles. .net.
Gary Bobroff, author of Crop Circles, Jung and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine, thank you so much for being on In Other News.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next week, Monday, 10 p.m.